Good evening, and welcome to What a World. Celebrating diversity and loving it, this is Nevin Campanella bringing you a radio talk show that has no limits and bows to no one. From this microphone, we bring you guests who will lead you across those shadowy plains of forbidden knowledge. Tonight's guest will be Wing Free, author of The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. But before we ride off into the mysteries of reincarnation, we'll have an earthquake report from Charlotte King. Charlotte will give us some physical symptoms associated with quakes and volcanic activity. Hi, Charlotte. What do you have for us tonight?
Hi, Nevin. Well, this has been a really active week, physically speaking. There's been a lot of people having migraine headaches. This indicates there's a lot of activity down south in Southern California into Mexico, Indonesia, and areas of other volcanic activity like the volcano that erupted in Guatemala last week. Also, there's been a lot of heart pain, and that can be in the form of sharp pain, which again is Southern California into Mexico, or it can be the dull pain, which is more Northern California, Eureka to the Bay, the areas of Idaho with the Wasatch system, and Hawaii and other areas. Two different days I woke up with a lot of pressure on my chest, had trouble getting a deep breath. That is turkey. Turkey causes migraine headaches with pressure on the chest. And be sure not to confuse it with a real heart condition, because it is similar to a heart condition. But because I know physically that I do not have an issue with that, I am pretty safe in saying that I know this is a symptom that goes with an area like turkey. The quakes that happened in the Ionian Sea and the Aegean Sea were precursors to the quakes in Turkey. And there's been a lot of back pain. The full upper back is Indonesia. And the right side is the Kuril Islands. The left side is Japan, which had another 5.9 today in the Sea of Japan. And the back pain can go into the ribs. And on the right side, that's an area I call the Domino Islands. Now, the Domino Islands are Tonga, Fiji, Samoa, Marianas, Solomons, Admiralty, Carolines, Marshall Islands, those areas. And the left side is the areas of Oceania, which would be Australia, New Zealand, Papua New Guinea, the New Ireland or New Britain, Papua New Guinea, and the Kermadec Islands. All have been quite active this last week. In the last 24 to 36 hours, we're having reports of earaches again, which, of course, there was another 6.0 in Pakistan, which is the left side earache. Also, Afghanistan is in that area, and they had a 5.2 and a 5.6 quakes this morning. Also, there has been a lot of the stomach pain being reported again, and that's usually the Sierras, or it can be tied into areas like the Wasatch, New Madrid, especially Idaho, Utah, Montana, Wyoming, West Yellowstone. Mount St. Helens has been kind of shaky again. That would be left side back of head pain if you're sensitive. If your right ankle, hip, knee, or leg is bothering you, that would be Peru, Brazil, Colombia. The Chile connection is rearing its head again. That means to beware, because emotions are right on the edge. You might do things that you would not normally do in another situation if Chile's stirring around. So be watchful of that. The ants have been coming in. Ants are a very good precursor to seismic activity. They tend to come up before a big earthquake, and when they disappear, you have a pretty good indication that the quake will hit within the next 12 to 24 hours. Other than that, that's pretty much what's been happening. I think that the earth is continuing to shake, rattle and roll, and we're just here for the...
Yeah, it sure is shaking, rattling, and rolling. You mentioned the Wasatch Front there, Charlotte. Of course, I'm right here in northern Utah, so I listen very closely for...
Well, you get to be on the first ride.
Yeah, I guess so. It's going to be a wild ride. Well, Charlotte, thank you so much for your report, and you have yourself a wonderful evening.
You too. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for that report, Charlotte. We'll be hearing from Charlotte on a regular basis. Also, we now have a toll-free number to take calls. Now, folks, understand that this radio system and all of it is experimental. Sometimes things are going to work, and sometimes they're not going to work. And it wasn't until 2 hours before the show we finally got an 800 number to work. Anyway, I'll give it to you. You won't be able to use it until towards the end of the show. And whether or not we actually take call-ins remains to be seen. I will later in the evening, I'll ask the guest that. Anyway, the number is 1-888-268-4313. Now, let's get to this date in history. There were some interesting events that took place on this date of October 23rd in history. For instance, in A.D. 425, Valentinian III became the new Roman emperor. So what makes that so special? Well, folks, he was only 6 years old. Can you imagine that? A six-year-old Roman emperor. Also on this date in history, in 1929, the New York Stock Exchange begins to show signs of panic, resulting in the Great, Great Depression. Some people are telling me that we're on the verge of that now. And on this date, Zane Grey, the American author, died. Now, some of you really young people out there don't know who he is, but let me tell you, he had some great stories, stories of the Old West. They were always set in a harsh landscape, but absolutely fascinating, fascinating stories. And many of his books were turned into movies. Hollywood did well with him. Current news? Well, Hurricane Wilma, it's forming in the Gulf, but it's only a Category 2. And considering the hurricanes we've had in the past, only 105 mile per hour winds. Not so bad when you're considering that some of these hurricanes blew in at the beginning end at 175. It is expected to make landfall around dawn on Monday. Now, a storm is not difficult to notice, especially when it's on your front lawn. But some things apparently are easier to notice than others. Everyone notices the hurricanes that have been streaking across the Gulf of Florida, but somehow a dead body in a car does not get noticed. This past Friday, an elderly man in Sydney, Australia, was given a parking ticket. But it went unnoticed that he was dead and had been so for 9 days. Now, that had to be right, folks. And how was it explained by local enforcement? Local law enforcement, quote, "It is simply a case of the parking officer not noticing." Sort of makes you wonder what else they don't notice. Now, some people are just not aware of the obvious, and some are extremely aware of the most subtle of events. Winfrey, author of The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, is one of those people whose incredible thirst for knowledge led him to the conclusion that David Wilcox, a prophet in his own right, especially regarding dimensional shift, is in fact the reincarnation of the sleeping prophet, Edgar Cayce. Wynn, originally a poet and songwriter, joined us tonight to share his own personal experiences across some extremely shadowy planes of forbidden knowledge. Hi, Wynn. Welcome to What a World Radio.
Hi, Evan. Thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here and to be able to share this with you, who puts out such a wonderful, safe energy to be able to talk about anything.
Oh, yeah. This is an open show, Wynn. Wynn, before we get to the esoteric, how about sharing a little of your background? How does a musician come to write about such a heady topic as reincarnation? And how is all this tied together on your website, Conversations with My Girlfriend?
Well, you know what? I've got three websites up. And for the past few years, I have not been able to integrate myself because some people see me as the author of the book. Some people know about my personal experiences with Conversations with My Girlfriend. And some people see me as a poet and a songwriter. And it's hard, you know, I start crossing things over, and the image of each thing is so different from the other am just starting to integrate it into myself to realize how it all works together.
Yeah,
but
that's got to be tough. You've got so many things going on.
Right.
Getting to that book, just how can someone out there get a copy of your book, Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce?
Well, it's available in all the stores. It's in Barnes & Noble. It's in metaphysical bookstores, and it's on Amazon. And it's also on the website I put up called caseysback.com. And if people order from my website, there's a free cassette that we add to it, which is a talk I gave at the Bodhi Tree on the book. And I find that when people read the book, it becomes very hard to, even when people are excited about it, it becomes hard to share it with someone else because it's so far out that it, you know, you start, even when it becomes real to you or even the possibility of being real, it's like, it sounds like that you maybe just joined a cult.
How did you as a musician, why don't you tell us a little bit, first of all, about how you became involved with it? You're a musician. Tell us a little bit about your music background and lead us into that book.
Well, we would have to go back to the time when I was a physics major in Berkeley at the University of California. And at that time, I would have, somebody asked me, do you believe in God? I would have said I was an agnostic. I said, I had this idea that if something was true, there had to be a way to validate it. And so I wasn't willing to just believe in something blindly because it was, you know, part of my religious background or someone else's. And then I started at that time writing lyrics, and I never thought of myself ever at that time of ever taking music seriously. But I think I actually started writing lyrics to other people's melodies. And I was somewhat of a nerd and somewhat, repressed and shy and untalkative, but I had kind of deep thoughts, but I didn't know I had deep thoughts. They were my thoughts and I wasn't sharing them. So I would write lyrics and then, I would play them for people and I'd find out that I was writing about the same deep things that other people were having and they were giving me a lot of acknowledgement. And then I met a woman who was kind of a bohemian artist mystic. And I was pretty young, and I played her some of my music, and she kind of flipped out over it. And we ended up starting a... Pardon me?
Was this at Berkeley?
In Berkeley, yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Her name was Jillian, and I give her credit for totally screwing up my life, because she was, like, doing astrology charts, and she was reading all these metaphysical books. And at first, I thought she was just out of it. And then I started to learn how to do astrology. I started to know all of our friends' birth signs, and then occasionally I would meet someone new, and they would remind me of someone that I knew, and I would guess their birth sign. And I said, oh my God, this can't work. It doesn't make sense in terms of physics. And then we were reading Edgar Cayce together, and I said, this guy was real. I mean, anyone who has studied Edgar Cayce, he, for 40 years, he would go into this trance state, and people would ask him questions, and he was omniscient. He could tell people their diseases, their health, very, using medical terms that he didn't know. He could tell people, now, this one was not as validatable, but he would tell people who they were in their past lifetimes and how their past lifetime affected them in this lifetime, like why their condition was connected with something they did in another life. Well, he did 15,000 readings. When he died, 500 books were written about him, and millions of people are aware of Edgar Cayce. He's considered like the Western world's Nostradamus. Anyone who's listening who's not aware of Edgar Cayce, I suggest do a Google Edgar Cayce, C-A-Y-C-E, and you'll see 100,000 plus websites about him. And so I was reading Edgar Cayce from the point of view of being a physics major, and I said, this guy really existed, and if he existed, there has to be something more to life than meets the eye.
I think that when it comes to Edgar Cayce, I get a little bit tossed around by everybody seems to know about Edgar Cayce, and yet the man himself seems, at a personal level, to me is a bit of a mystery. I understand that he himself had many difficulties, including such things as migraine headaches and very poor business skills. So for all the prophecy he was able to do, he did not seem to be able to do anything for himself. Is that correct?
Pretty much so. In fact, basically, as I was doing the research on my book, it became pretty evident that wasn't even that hot about doing his readings. He only did them because it was helping so many people, but his own level of ego recognition was not being nourished. In other words, people would come to his house, his wife and his secretary would gather around him, they would ask questions, and he would go to sleep. And he didn't have any, gratification for what he was creating. It was being created while he was sleeping. So it's like everyone wants to do something and be proud of it in the world. And here, people will come to his house and say, "You're ready to go to sleep at this point." And he resisted it at first. He wasn't sure if it was positive. He wasn't sure if it was the devil. He was a Christian. And then he kept helping people. His advice kept helping them. In fact, he saved many lives through his medical readings. And so,
did he never know his own messages? In other words, he was apparently in this trance state.
No, he never remembered his messages. He would only get to know them when he would read the transcripts. He had a secretary.
That had to be really spooky for him. I mean,
kind
of going to sleep every night, and then somebody wakes you up and says, "Oh, that was great." And you go, "What?" You know, that had to be a little bit rough on his ego. How come
Originally, he was a photographer, and he had a photographic studio, and he was getting, a lot of acknowledgement for being a very good photographer. And eventually, he gave that up to do the readings because he realized he had this gift and that it was very precious. And in spite of, his own personal problems, he kept doing it.
Did he ever make any kind of income off of it?
Yeah, he would charge a small donation. Never made a lot of money, but he charged a small donation. And at different times, like one time he tried to use his readings to discover oil so he could make a lot of money. And he couldn't do it. Didn't work. In fact, things would always screw up. Even when he discovered the oil, he wasn't able to manifest it in a business sense, and somebody else made all the money from the oil that he discovered.
Was it just a bad business method, or do you think that there were forces working him against this for doing things for self-gain?
Well, I would say it was probably both. It was bad business. I mean, having known David this lifetime, I know that David is not a very good business person. He probably did. And, it's like on the conscious level, he gets worried about taking advantage of. He gets worried about maintaining the purity of his purpose. And so he's guarded and all this stuff. And I can quite well understand it. I can quite well understand it. Because when you're doing something which is so, shall we say, high, it's so easy for it to get corrupted. It's so easy for other people to see it as a profit motivation or a TV show and lose the high intent. And then you get caught up in a business matrix as opposed to planetary service. And
that's a biggie for all of us, Witten. Trying to maintain integrity, getting information out there, and yet at the same time not getting caught in that damn financial world and trap in which people, they dangle things in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be resistant.
Well, I've learned is that it's okay to do big things as long as people have the right intent of service. but those are few and far between. In fact, one of the reasons when I first heard about Don's website and started studying it, I could feel that whoever put that website up had one heck of a high intent.
And an amazing that, man. Absolutely amazing.
And it made me feel really comfortable being involved, and you know, it ended up in Don and I doing a show together on Saturday nights because we were having.
That's the Don and Win show, Win and Don show. I don't know how you.
The Don and Win show.
Don and Win show, and please do tune in. Give the date and time on that show again.
That's on Saturday night at 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
We're going to cover some of the stuff that Wynn is personally involved in, but you're going to get a lot more information by listening to his show. Go ahead.
Basically, Don and I were just having these wonderful conversations every day. We were talking about esoteric things, and, you know, they were very creative conversations. And I told Don, I said, you know what? I think people would be interested in hearing the kind of stuff we talk about. Why don't we put it up at a show? And then one day I recorded one of the conversations without telling them. And I said, okay, Don, we have our first show. And I sent it to the cassette to him and he liked it. That's how it started.
Oh, fantastic. Don never told me that.
In fact, I told him about a half an hour into our conversation. I said, "Don, I'm taping this. It's our first show."
Fantastic! He's a marvelous individual, and he has a source of energy and strength that I sure can't keep up with.
Mm-hmm.
We have the pre-show jitters every week, but every week he comes through. I mean, you know, an hour and a half before this show, our 800 number was not working, and I don't know how he did it. He came up with an 800 number that worked. Mm-hmm. I mean, the man is amazing. Getting back to Edgar Cayce.
Nevin?
I
wanted to fill in a little bit more about my early life, okay?
Go for it.
As you know, you've been tracking and we've talked and you kind of know what's been happening for me. And it's like, I think it's like the story, the in-between story is so far out that it's important that people get to know me because I'm just a human and, I have all the human things that everyone goes through. And by telling a little bit about my background that grounds that. Because
absolutely. Yeah. It makes you a real person.
I'm a real person. I have no self-aggrandizing motives. In fact, you know, as you know, there's certain aspects of the story that I'm actually scared to talk about because it's so catalytic. You know, it's so impactful to what's happening on our planet, the history of our planet, the way religion works, all those things. And it's I want to lead up to that by telling other people how it came to me, how it happened for me, because then it'll make more sense. I couldn't possibly make this up. I've had to think, is there anything negative here? Is there anything negative in what I'm doing? Can I trust the information I'm getting? I don't want to put a book out that leads people astray, that has a negative source or brings forth, you know, the kinds of stuff that I talk about are very impactful if you take it seriously. And I want to make sure, at least to the best of my abilities, that it's positive. Some of it I can't validate as being true. We're all going to have to watch and see. But if it is true, it's going to be prepare people who study the material for things that are so out of the box, so out of the matrix that
you're getting into the realms of some of your own connections with channeling. But before
right.
we get there, I need you to cover one little area. How did you become originally involved with David Wilcox? And please explain who David Wilcox is.
Well, let me go back to my Berkeley times and starting to write music and this girl that I was seeing.
Yeah, great. She always liked to talk about girls.
Right. She ended up, I couldn't sing at the time, and she could sing, and she thought that my songs, the stuff I was writing should be presented to people. So we started a rock and roll band. And we started playing in little clubs. She and I, and a drummer, and a bass player, and another singer songwriter. And then the rock and roll band broke up eventually. But I was having far more fun playing music than I was as a physics teacher. And I said, I think this is what I'm supposed to do. So she and I, Jillian and I, started traveling around the country as a duo, singing my songs. And we were traveling in a Volkswagen bus, and this was the time that hippies were big, and I had very long hair, and so we would go, and we would be like hippie emissaries coming into a town, going to a bar, we would sing in between the bands, pass the hat. I mean, it was like a fantasy dream coming true. And I remember the
60s well. I ran around in some of those ugly green Volkswagen buses myself.
Oh, you did? Okay. We did this for about 3 years, and we went back to Glee, and I said to myself that I had something I needed to learn. I was still, I was very dependent on her energy. I didn't feel like I was worthy in myself, or I couldn't center stuff in myself. So, I decided I was going to take a hitchhiking trip. And I guess one of my big influences at the time was Bob Dylan and Woody Guthrie and all of that Americana kind of folk stuff. So I started hitchhiking with my guitar, and by this time I learned how to do astrology books. I learned how to do astrology, and I left Berkeley. I was living in Berkeley, and for about the next 4 to 5 years, it was as if I had jumped off a cliff and I was in free fall. I look back now and I see what I did. And what I did was I completely extricated myself from the matrix of this planet. And I was like having daily miracles happen to me. Miracles of synchronicity. I would meet people of the same birth sign right in a row, one after another on the same day. But I was like a street person. I mean, it wasn't like I was doing anything in a grounded way. It was like I was having these flows through another dimension, and reality was happening in a way that it just couldn't work. And I was doing this for 4 or 5 years. I ended up, in some craziest situations, I ended up playing in between the bands at a discotheque in Greenwood Lake, New Jersey for a summer. I ended up staying on people's couches in New York City for months and going to all the little coffee shops. I ended up playing at colleges. And I got the idea that, man, there's this other reality that exists and people don't know about it. And that I wanted to put it in my music, and I started writing songs, trying to download how that reality worked in my music. And, you know, you can hear some of those songs there on the Don and Wynn show page. Don puts some MP3s up of some of my songs. And I got good enough as a songwriter to think that I could succeed at it as a career. And I went to Los Angeles. And I still had this magic carpet. Miracles kept happening. Miracles of synchronicity that I'll share. Maybe I should share one or two, because when I say a miracle of synchronicity, people don't know what that really means, some of them. And I'll share give one example of one of those kinds of things. I had somebody that was the manager of the house band at that discotheque in Greenwood Lake. His name was Mark Gillotin. When I got to Los Angeles, suddenly I ran into Mark Gillotin, and he was working for a publisher, Don Costa. Now, Don Costa is a famous producer, used to produce Frank Sinatra. So Mark said, I'm so glad you're here. We want to, maybe we can get some of your songs recorded through this publishing company. So then they published a couple of my songs, and they got recorded. One of them was by a Canadian who had a TV show named Renee Simard. And then Mark ended up getting another job at the office of the Holland Brothers, which was Brian and Edward Holland, and of Holland Dozier Holland. They were like two songwriters that were the most famous. Next to the Beatles, they had more hit songs than anyone else. They wrote all the songs for the Supremes, the Four Tops, legendary songs. And Mark was working there, and he says, I want them to hear your songs. Well, eventually, I went to their office, and Mark was no longer there. He had lost his job. And I decided I would just leave my tape there, just in case someone would listen to it. I left their office. I went to a coffee shop a couple blocks away. I went to the counter of the coffee shop, and there's this guy next to me, and I'm carrying my guitar, and we have a conversation, and I tell him I'm a songwriter, and he listens to my hitchhiking stories. He's listened to me for 15 or 20 minutes, and then after I'm finished, he says he writes some songs too. And I said, oh, do you ever get anything recorded? It turns out it was Brian Holland.
Oh.
And I said, oh, you won't believe this. I just left the tape in your office. He says, I'm going to have to listen to that. And so then I kept calling back, and I could never get through to him. You know, these people are surrounded and protected. So 3 months later, I was on the other side of Hollywood, and I was at Don Costa's office, and I was walking to my car, which was on a small street in above Sunset Boulevard, and this gold Mercedes was driving by me. And I was on my way to Brian Holland's office to see if synchronicity would work. That was the thought that was in my mind. This gold Mercedes, the driver of it was Edward Holland, Brian's brother. And he didn't know me, but I recognized him from his pictures, and I started knocking on his window saying, you won't believe this, I'm on my way to your office right now. And he rolled down his window. He should have driven off. I don't know why he didn't drive off. He rolled down his window and says, well, we're not there. Why don't you come tomorrow? And Brian and I will listen to your songs. So the next day I went, and by this time they had moved to another office in the same building, and all their stuff was in boxes and unpacked. And their receptionist told me to wait in a room and sent me to a room which was empty except for the tape with my song unopened. So somehow my song floated on top of all these boxes and ended up in that room. I mean, it was not by intention. I mean, they couldn't have found that tape if anyone asked them, you know, to save their lives. But somehow it was in that room. They listened to the tape and they said, hey, you write some good songs. We don't like your melodies, but, you know, I wasn't writing Motown melodies. But we can do something with your lyrics. And then I started coming in every day and we started writing some songs together. And then while this was going on, I would oftentimes go down to Venice Beach, and take a walk on the beach. One day, I went to a bar, and I would never talk to a woman at a bar, really. But this time I was sitting at a bar, I was drinking a beer, it was a hot day, and there was a girl next to me. Her name was Pat Hogan. She was getting drunk, and we started having a conversation. And she took me home with her, and I started seeing her. And 2 months later, she moved. And I helped her move. She moved into a place called the Marina City Club. And I started seeing her at the Marina City Club, and I left her apartment one morning, and there was an envelope on the door next to her, and that envelope was addressed to Edward Holland. So here I'm having these relationships with these very, very legendary famous people, and I pick up a girl in a bar, and she moves next door to one of them.
That's now, absolutely amazing.
We're
going to run out of time here. We only have 20 minutes left in this show.
Oh, we're not going to go for 2 hours, huh?
No, we only have 1 hour. So we need to move it along a little bit. I want to get to David Wilcox, but I really want to get to your most recent things that you've been doing yourself.
Okay. Well, an overview here, Nevin. What's been happening to me and to David, you know, is that there is communication occurring from two oversouls for our planet. And, you know, there's a lot of premise here that people are not going to necessarily believe in the first time they hear it, i.e., is reincarnation real? How do you know we reincarnate? And this is something that I would say that there's enough evidence if someone looks for it. They can start out reading Edgar Cayce. They can read my book about David Wilcock, which pretty much proves that he's the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce.
I see the photographs. They're amazing.
Yeah, there's enough, you know. And so then the question comes up, well, why do we reincarnate and how does all that work? And some of these questions are answered in my own experience and in my book. So let me just say what's really most important, and that is we exist as an energy, and then we exist as a body. We exist simultaneously in other dimensions and in this dimension, but our senses are only designed to measure this dimension. And there's a veil in place that keeps us from direct connection with other dimensions. But any person can establish what I would call indirect connection with other dimensions and validate that they exist.
What's the point of that veil?
What's the point of it?
Yeah.
Well, at this point, I'm going to have to just repeat what they say. At one point, way back when, there was a group of, at one point, there were individual souls that all were aware of what we could call the law of one, that we're all part of each other. And there was a group that broke off and said, what happens if we forget? Or we wipe that clean and we rediscover it and are part of the solar system of the galaxy is the result of that decision. Now, supposedly, the individual soul that made that decision of what happens if we forget was Lucifer. Their name was Lucifer in the higher dimensions, and it wasn't like he had a bad intention. It was like playing a game. In other words, it was all like games. It was like, okay, we're all part of everything. We can create things. We can think things, and they come into being. And then they wanted to anchor things so they would last longer than you would think about them. Like when you're in a spirit form, when you're in a high spirit form, you totally, whatever you intend happens. But as soon as you stop thinking about it or intending it, it disappears. Now, I don't really understand this. I'm telling you how it's been explained, and it does make sense to me, but it's certainly not something that I can directly validate. Now,
wait a minute. When you said information to you, how do you get this information? The audience needs to know that.
How did I get this? Well, you know, I've read, first of all, it's part of the understanding I got as I was researching my book. It's part of reading Edgar Cayce. It was part of the channelings coming through David. Also, other people have come up with very similar points of view. They're not quite as famous or as credible, but I started cross-referencing it. And I say, well, this is a point of view that seems to be fairly prevalent among many people who channel. And so we ended up in this realm with this veil where we could not get the stuff indirectly. So we have to get it. I don't mean indirectly, I mean directly. We can't get this directly, so we have to get it indirectly. Now, supposedly, everyone, when they sleep, goes into other dimensions because you're no longer in your body. You're in other dimensions. And your dreams, and sometimes you can have dreams and dream messages, and some of them may be communications with other dimensions, but you can't remember them when you wake up. Unless you make a concerted effort to record your dreams. And that's how David first started to get this, his own connection with these higher sources. He started to record his dreams. He put a pad by his bed. He would wake up in the middle of the night. He would write down whatever was in his mind. He would wake up, and then he'd find messages like somebody talking to him. Now, at first, he thought he was making it up. But after a very short period of time, his dream voice, as he would call it, started making predictions for the future, and the predictions would happen. Very specific predictions that happened precisely as they were said. And so now he knew he wasn't making it up. So for the next time, he would dictate into a tape recorder, he would get messages, and basically, his dream voice was counseling him. It was like he had a psychotherapist coming through his dreams. Now, many people had the experience of penetrating the veil, but they don't call it that. For example, do you ever have a phone ring and you're just thinking of calling somebody and they call you? Well, there has to be a penetration of the veil. What we call psychic connection has to be on the other side of the veil. Of course, we've seen people like John Edwards who can channel people who are discarnate entities on the other side of the veil. We have people who get intuitive flashes. Like when I would write songs, I realized that oftentimes I didn't write them. The words would come out and it would all be grouped together. And it was somewhat akin to channeling because I didn't even know how it was going to turn out until it finished.
Yeah, most of us, I think, have had these kinds of experiences where all of a sudden we get flooded with information and we don't have a clue as to where it comes from.
Exactly. And so when you do a prayer goes through the veil, and if it has the right intention and all the circuits are hooked up, you can get a result. And oftentimes, maybe all the time, I don't know, you have these group souls, as I've learned how they work, there's these group souls on the other side of the veil, which are monitoring us, and that they assist in carrying out really pure intentions. And that's just talking through David Wilcock, a group soul. And who is a group soul? The way it's described is, when we go through all these lifetimes, and every time we have a life, we forget everything, but we carry the energy of the previous life. We carry the awareness, the learning. Like there's cases where young children suddenly are having enormous talents and can play the piano or something because they did it in their past lifetime, and they still carry that particular talent with them. Well,
do we maintain our awareness of our personality?
I would say, from my understanding, that your personality will change, but your issues won't. Your personality will change because you're brought up within your parents' environment, you're brought up within a society, you're constantly programming yourself from your input. So your personality is going to reflect all those things, although your issues might not change. For example, if you happen to be very selfish, you're probably going to continue to be selfish. If you happen to be very loving, you're going to continue to be loving. If you happen to be wise, you'll probably continue being wise.
Do people get past these things? In other words, if you have something that, I don't know what else to call it other than negative, such as being selfish, do people get beyond that through these reincarnational experiences?
Well, the idea is, in each lifetime, the experiences you're given are teaching you how to get beyond it. I.e., a selfish person is selfish because they think it's to their advantage to be selfish. They believe that. They believe if they're not selfish, they're going to lose. They're going to go broke. They've got to, be acquisitive. And so suddenly they may get a lot of things, but they don't have any love in their life. And eventually they start to hunger for love. And so they make a small decision about love, and they make an openness. You can't love and be selfish, can you? Love is not a selfish thing. You can't experience love from a selfish point of view.
No, love is always something you give.
You can give and receive. Real love is when two people can experience oneness, when each other's needs and wants is you feel it part of yourself. So you want to make that person feel great because you're one with them, and then it comes right back to you. Now, normally, in reincarnational episodes, all this learning takes is very slow, and it can take hundreds on hundreds of lives to get it. And, what happens is you do things, and then you suffer, and you don't realize the connection between what you're doing and the suffering until it starts to get speeded up, and then you can start monitoring it. This is something I've done this lifetime. I've paid very close attention to everything I'm doing and how it affects my state of being, so I could see the connection. And I speeded up my own evolution where it's fairly short and I can see it. So I've been learning all of this stuff at a rapid rate. For most people, these cycles are slower, so it's harder to grasp the cause and effect of what you sow, you shall reap.
Can you tie in for us the concept of karma as it relates to what you're talking about?
Well, karma would be the idea that you carry forward the impressions of your past lifetimes, and you keep carrying them forward and as lessons so that you can overcome them. Now, you don't have to overcome them. You can keep recycling the same issues. You can kind of go from one lifetime to the next, and it's kind of linear. You're not really growing. Each of us has to make the right choices, but we have to know the reasons why we're making those choices. That's why it's so important to study this kind of material, because if you integrate the fact that it really does work this way, you can start experimenting and saying, well, if I make my choices in a different way, then I can watch what happens over a period of time. Because each of us has the ability to change. What happens is, because of our past lifetimes, we have this energy. Each of us is an energy transformer, that we tap into the energy of what we could call the highest God or the galactic center, and it flows through our body and into the earth. Except, where our body has trauma in it, where our body has fear, where our body has those things, the energy doesn't flow. And we feel the emptiness. And we keep our challenges. We know we feel that emptiness or that pain in that part of our body. And so how do we get rid of it? How do we transcend it? Now, there's a huge amount of people that are, practitioners that, and some of them legitimate, some of them may not be, but they work with, starting with psychotherapy. It's like, how do you get through your pain? Let's go through where your past trauma is. Some of the trauma came from this life, from your parents in this life. So, you can see it as a direct cause and effect. You don't have to go into other past lives. Other people have vast issues that have no connection with this life, but came from a past life. Now, they don't necessarily have to know their past life to deal with the issue. They can know that you can almost reverse engineer these things and figure it out if you start to learn how karma works. For example, there's for a long period of my life, I was in a constant state of being rejected. And I started to say, if I'm really in a constant state of being rejected, it's not because there's something wrong with me. I'm putting out an energy that is that's causing other people to reject me. And where did that energy come from? Then you start contemplating that, and you can start to modify your energy. Now, that's not a fast process. It's not something you can do with your mind. It's not something you can do with your willpower. You're changing deep, deep patterns, subconscious patterns, that are ingrained in your system. And most people have those patterns and don't realize they're even possible to change. They've grown so accustomed to living in that energy, and their life validates that energy. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy that if you put something out, your life validates it. So the first step is to say, maybe it's possible to change. Maybe it's possible to release some of this pain I feel. Maybe it's possible to experience love. What's between me and those experiences? What could I be in my body that's keeping my energy contained? You see, if you live all your life and your energy is really compressed, you don't know your energy is compressed, because that's how it feels to be you. And
you have a personal experience about that with your sister, don't you? Someone who was retaining something, became ill.
Right. Well, you know, I'm sorry, I didn't know we were going to go 2 hours. That's why I started talking so much about myself.
No, that's fine. I just got word from the producer that we can go beyond. So you
can. We can go beyond. Okay, good. Because, you know, to bring through this story, yeah, before we go to my sister, let me go back to this idea that we go through all these lifetimes and we go through all these different dimensions in our evolution. And eventually, if we play the game really well and we go through our growth and we make good decisions, and we're talking about good decisions over hundreds of lifetimes, we're talking about a very long timeline. Each life is a little bit more evolved than the one before. At the very highest levels of evolution, there's what you could call group souls. Group souls act as kind of God forms for planets at lower levels of evolution. And so we have two major group souls that I'm aware of, and there may be others, but two that I have been intimately aware of, that have both explained themselves as having gone through all these evolutions of millions of years, perhaps, of evolution, that they were individual bodies like us on a planet either in this solar system or another one, and they've gone through this evolution, and now they exist as a conglomerate of energy in a higher dimension, and they are helping planets at lower levels of dimension, like ours, and explaining what's happening on our planet. And
hey, that brings up a question to me. When you say higher and lower, just how low are we? For instance, in relationship to other entities.
Well, to say low and think of it, first of all, there's many people in this dimension that have come from higher dimensions and that actually have gone through this level of evolution and did not have to come here. But they volunteered to come here. According to the information, I'm pretty sure this is true, because I got a lot of validation for this, but it's not something that is readily, easily provable. So let's go along and think that it might be true, that these groups are, let me explain how this evolutionary period that we're in right now, according to these two group souls. Now, one group soul is talking through David Wilcock, identifies himself as Ra. The other group soul has been talking to me through two of my girlfriends and has identified themselves as the Elohim. And when I was first exposed to this concept, I said, can this be real? I mean, who are these guys? Can I trust this? And it's taken me a very long time of living inside of it, asking questions, to say that I think this is the real way that it works. And this
Let's go back for a second. When you kind of jumped on us there from David Wilcock's two girlfriends, why don't you explain a little bit of the background on that, on how that channeling occurred?
Well, what happened to me is I started writing the book about, I discovered David Wilcock's website. I saw his explanation for being Edgar Cayce. He was not very together in his presentation, but I read the story and I said, you know what? I think this guy is telling the truth. Not only that, you know, like I said, when I studied blogging service, I could see Don's intent and his intent shines through. Well, when I studied David Wilcox's website, I could see David Wilcox's intent. And his intent was not to get attention, not to try to get people. He really had an important message, and he was on fire with the importance of putting his message in front of people's eyes so they would consider it. And the group Soul Speaking Through David was Ra. And then I started writing the book, and I started studying David, and I started putting all this stuff together. And it was like I was a cosmic Columbo. I felt like I was uncovering some of the deepest things about life and religion and the background of religion and how it all worked. And part of it was intuitively registering with me, and part of it was the explanations from Ra, the group Soul. And I started writing the book, and I'm 2 years into the book, and suddenly I meet a woman who I have this connection with, and I'm not going to tell the whole story, but it's up on conversationswithmygirlfriend.com, and I recommend that you read that if you're following this along, because it explains how all this started. She becomes my girlfriend. In fact, we're living together, and we're taking a drive to Portland, Oregon, and we're in the car in Northern California, and it's raining, and I do this prayer, this invocation, calling in the light. And at the end of it, I look at the headliner of the car, and I say, "So does anybody want to talk to me?" Like a joke. And she answers, and suddenly I'm having a conversation with something that doesn't sound like her, except I thought she was making it up. I really didn't believe it was happening.
Was her voice changing also?
Well, it was her voice, but it was more authoritative, far more authoritative than her normal voice. Her normal voice is, "Hi, I have a headache," you know, kind of a whining feminine. I don't want to use the word whining, but, you know, she was going through a lot of inner struggle and turmoil. And suddenly this voice is coming through that's speaking like, yes, that's a, you know, very clipped and authoritative. And then we ended up in Portland, Oregon. We're staying in a hotel. 3 days later, I ask her, "Hey, would you like to try that again?" And we turn on a tape recorder, and now I'm taping the conversation, and I ask the questions, and this voice comes through and says, "My girlfriend is from another dimension, and she came here to deliver these messages, and I'm supposed to help her do it, and this is really important, and please help her feel grounded." I mean, that was the essence of it. They said she was a outpost messenger, okay? That's what they described it. Well, she was kind of freaking out over it. And she said, "I can't believe anything that important could be happening through me." And I wasn't sure how to take it. I wasn't sure if it was positive, if I could trust it, or if some part of her subconscious was making it up. I mean, I'm not an easy believer. I mean, I'm really... I'm skeptical. It took me, you know, here I am writing the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, and I got this voice coming through my girlfriend. So the third time we did it, I said, "Listen, can you guys predict a newspaper headline? I'm not sure that she's not making this up." And they said, "No problem." And then they said, "Watch for this headline Memorial Day weekend," which was 2 weeks later. And 2 weeks later, the headline happened. And so I said, "Okay, she's not making it up. Whoever's talking to me is obviously got some one heck of precognitive powers to predict a newspaper headline."
Was that the chemical spill?
Pardon me?
Was that the chemical spill?
That was the chemical spill, right. And so, you know, they said they could read the Akashic Records, they could do health readings. And I started asking every question under the sun. I mean, they were just, whatever else we were doing, she would say, "Those guys want to talk to you again." And they're just inviting me to ask questions. And they identified themselves as the Council of Elohim. And I looked up the word Elohim on the internet, and it said God of the Old Testament and the group that was talking to Joseph Smith when he started the Mormon Church. And so I asked them, is this the same Elohim? And they said, yes, it was. And I said, why me? And basically they said I was a cosmic midwife. I knew how to bring
what?
These things. A cosmic midwife, i.e., I was able to give birth to these things into the world. Like I had done with David. You know, I took David and took his story and made it so it was legitimized it so that people take him very seriously now. And so it was like giving birth to a whole new idea of reality that David is representing. And so they said I was a cosmic midwife and that I could reach them and that what I was doing was very important. And, you know, throughout all of this, the girl was terrible. She was telling me, I can't believe anything that important could be happening to me. And you know, when she met me, she had left her husband to be with me, which I didn't encourage. She wanted it. She just said, I never felt anything with you. In fact, if I had my head on straight, I would have told her, don't do it. But she left her husband, and her husband was like this very well-to-do computer mogul. And I'm like this guy that's this street poet, sometimes living in my RV. And now she's
traveling around with a guitar in an RV.
Yeah, right. And now I've got somebody's trophy wife. And she's spoiled, and she, you know, is not used to struggle and strife. She's used to everything being taken care of. She never worked in her life. And she's beautiful, and she's angelic. And I couldn't make her happy. She kept, you know, she was just complaining all the time. And the other thing that was happening is she would wake up in the middle of the night screaming, like she was under some kind of attack. And she would scream and scream, and I would have to hold her and try to calm her down. And it was a very bizarre experience. But I'm asking every question under the sun about anything, about my book, about who I was in my past lifetimes, what was my relationship with my landlord. And, you know, I really wanted this relationship to work. There's something about me that really cared about this woman, as miserable as she would make me be. And, I asked the question one time, can you guys help me with the horse races? And they said, that would not be a good idea. It would take you into patterns of previous lifetimes and block what you're supposed to be doing this lifetime. But, I mean, this was like conversations, just like I'm talking to you. I mean, I wasn't intimidated by it. And I wasn't even sure I was talking to the Elohim. I knew whoever I was talking to was giving me very loving counsel. They were giving me very accurate prophetic information very often. And of course, then they had the situation which you brought up earlier of my sister. I asked them the question. I said, you know, my sister has really bad health and she has lupus. Is there anything you can tell me that I can share with my sister for her health? And they said that my sister had bad health because she used her health as a way of getting attention. And that, that's why I hadn't seen her for 12 years. And then they said in 3 months, my sister was going to face a circumstance where she was going to have to choose whether to live or to die. And I mean, I did not know what to do with that information. I wasn't sure I believed it. I did call my nephew up and I said, how's Joanne? Is there anything, you know, she worse or anything? You know, she's always got aches and pains, but is there anything happening? And my nephew said, no, she's just the same as always. Well, 3 months later, her husband calls me and says, Joanne's going into the hospital and they don't think she'll make it. And they found this cancer tumor in her lower back. So that morning, before her operation, we did a channeling. And I asked, I said, can you guys help?
This is with the girlfriend you did a channeling?
This is with the girlfriend. Girlfriend X, I call her. Okay?
Okay.
And they said that because I asked, they would help. And so my sister survived that operation. And I still don't believe in my mind that they did it. I believe that it was, she was going to survive anyway. I said, this has got to be some kind of coincidence. Because how could a voice coming through my girlfriend, because I asked, my sister lives. Well, 6 weeks later, my sister had to go in for tests to see if the cancer returned. And the nurse said, nope, there's no, absolutely no cancer, but there's something wrong with the test because we can't measure your lupus. And lupus never disappears from the test. So they tested her again, and the lupus was gone. So they made sure with an exclamation point that they knew that this was no coincidence and that there was an intervention. And I started to really think, maybe I'm really talking to the Elohim. Maybe this really is the Elohim. I said, how do I use this? God, maybe we can be saving lives. So in the meantime, the girlfriend was saying, I can't believe anything that important can happen to me. It's not cognizing with her that this happened. It's like it didn't really happen. She couldn't believe it. And I asked them, I said, can you guys recommend something? Because I think that what we're doing is really important, and she doesn't take it seriously. And so they said, we recommend that you go to Mesa, Arizona. And
why Mesa?
They said you would find a group there that would be open to what you're doing. Now, I was going to go to Mesa. I wasn't going to move there. I was going to go spend a weekend or spend a few days and just see what happened. I mean, they have been right on. I mean, they saved my sister's life. They predicted a headline. And they're giving me all this wise counsel. Now, I should say there's something else very important here, very, very important in terms of people who are listening that happened during this six-month period with girlfriend X. And that is, let me go back to my book about David Wilcock. David, the book has four different little sections or four premises that it makes. The first premise is that David Wilcock is the reincarnation of Edgar Casey. And, of course, there's an incredible story, incredible synchronicities that tie David to Casey. And I had either there's billions of one odds that all these things could happen to someone, or David's Casey. And most people that read the book believe that David is Casey. The next thing is, I have these transcriptions of the channelings in the book from this group soul that's speaking through Casey and Wilcock that identifies itself as Ra. And these channelings are wise. There is wisdom beyond belief inherent in these channelings. And, you don't need to believe that David's Casey to recognize the wisdom. The wisdom, did you happen to read that part of the book, Nevin? The second part?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I even went back further than the book and started looking at the raw material itself. And
okay.
Some of what is said you're right, it's self-evident.
Yeah.
You don't have to be a prophet what they're saying is just plain logical.
Right, right. And I was knowing David, and I said David could never come up with this stuff out of his own conscious mind. So the wisdom that's coming through is self-evident. Now, David, when he was told that he was supposed to explain this dimensional shift to the planet, that was his role this life. And how did he start doing that? I mean, he started studying the solar system. And he started documenting what he calls climate changes in the solar system. And this is something which, you started your show off with all these earthquakes that are happening on the planet, right? This is like our entire solar system and our planet is in this amazing transition right now. That's the result of being at the end of a 75,000 year cycle. And there's nothing in recorded history of mankind to explain what it means to be in the end of this cycle. And David was documenting the changes in the solar system, like planets are getting twice as bright. Magnetic fields are getting stronger. There's all these transformations that are occurring that are documented by science. And David...
I would fail as a talk show host if I did not ask you what kind of timeline. I mean, I know you're talking about cycles, but everybody out there right now is saying to themselves, yeah, but when? The kinds of things that you're talking about, do you have a year...
Nevin, let me save that question for a moment, okay?
All right.
I'll go back to it because I'm making a point now, and I'm going to lose my point if I answer your question, okay?
Go for it.
So all these changes happening right now, documented, that are NASA research, university research. I have a whole chapter in the book dedicated to all these changes, and they're indisputable because they're scientifically provable. So those three things, David is Casey, wise information, and our solar system is in a transition. Okay? There's a fourth thing that the book presents that I didn't even want to put in the book when I first started writing it. And that is that our planet is going through an ascension process, and that people are going to disappear from this level and go to a higher realm as per what Jesus was describing.
You mean physically disappear, Wayne? Are you saying that people will just
I'm saying physically disappear. And that this process is being guided by these group souls who were very involved with Jesus trying to get mankind ready for this event. And I can explain it to you. I've learned to understand it metaphysically, energetically, and I didn't want to put it in the book. I said, you know, I got a great book here. I got Edgar Casey come back. I got a great case for it. I got wisdom. What do I want to talk about ascension for? I didn't know it was true. I didn't know it was true, but I had to put it in the book because David's website was called Ascension 2000. Okay? David was here to explain ascension. Now, if that doesn't make his mission the most controversial mission on the planet, nothing does. And so I spent the first 2 years of the book and I started, you know, I have a whole chapter on ascension. And I said, I'm going to put it in, I'm going to say what they say, and I'm going to let people make up their own mind. Now, here, 2 years into the book, I have a girlfriend that's channeling. She's channeling, and she's predicting newspaper headlines. I've had a healing of my sister's life. I'm having wise counseling. And I ask every question I had about the premise of ascension. And they gave me the same answers as I was writing in the book.
Okay, now wait a minute, Wayne. These in fact though are two different groups, right?
They're two different groups. They work together. I mean, I asked how they work together. I asked the different roles. I mean, you know, it's like I have a PhD on all of this, Nevin. I mean, I actually have been talking to church groups who are taking me very seriously, and the ministers are listening and examining my story and saying, this guy might have the right answer to what's going on.
And this happened to you in Mesa, talking to some of these churches.
I talked 5 hours at a Unity church in Flagstaff, Arizona. I did another talk. I found out that there's a Unity Church in Des Moines that has taken my book and doing a weekly study group on it. And I didn't even know that was happening. But somebody read it and said, this book is explaining what Jesus was talking about in metaphysical and scientific terms, and it makes sense. And for me, I'm asking all the questions, and I'm getting exactly the same answers from the Elohim through my girlfriend as I had just written in the book, okay? So, you know what? While we're here worried about when's the next earthquake and are we going to survive, we got another big issue, a much bigger issue to be concerned about, and that is, are we going into ascension, and how does that work? And, you know, that is, if I have it right, and I can't begin to say this is true, I can only repeat stories, say what's being said, say how I've learned to understand it, and urge people to read my book. Start off reading my book and say, does this resonate? And after you read the book, study David's website, because it's loaded
the concept of ascension, I get the impression from the little I have read that not everyone is going to be involved in it. Is that correct?
Well, let me explain to you the idea of ascension, okay, and how it works, as I've learned to understand it. And what this dimensional shift, what this 2012 is all about. You ready? Here we go.
Yeah, go for it.
There's an energy that pervades empty space, which you could call spiritual energy. You could call it the unified field. The Russians are calling it torsion wave radiation. It's an energy that all of us are somewhat aware of when you walk into a room and it has good vibes, okay? Good vibes is not electrical energy. It's not magnetic energy, but there's something that a human intuitively connects with, and they call it good vibes. It's that, this is the energy we're talking about. This energy is through all space, but it's not equally distributed. It has peaks in it. And our solar system is moving through this energy. And these peaks of energy come every 75,000 years, approximately. And on the other side, in the other dimensions, it was well known that right now, a period of the evolution of our planet, we would be in the end of that 75,000-year cycle. The Mayans were tuned in to interdimensional communication. They had communication, perhaps with these very same group souls, although I don't have validation for that. They had very high information. And this is why the Mayan calendar ends in 2012. Now, I'm going to make this simple. Simple, try to make people grasp it intuitively. This energy is causing the chaos that we're experiencing on the planet right at this moment.
Are you talking about the geophysical chaos, or are you talking about the cultural and political?
All of it. It's behind it. And I mean, you know, I can't explain it all, Nevin. It's kind of complex. I just can only give a hint, and I hope that people will read the book, because read it more than once and read it slowly. Because if I got it right, the major group oversoul for our planet, who has been guiding our planet through the history of mankind, is coming forward through David Wilcock explaining what's going on. And it is, you know, they've proven themselves through their wisdom, through their connection. And they say, we've come to you. They say, it's not in the book, this wasn't in the book, but there's another channeling David did. We've come to you through all the spiritual teachers throughout your history, and we've tried to give the guidance so mankind would be, I'm paraphrasing this, so mankind would be prepared for this event. And as you will see, this is the time that all the prophecies are coming true. And what's causing this is this upgrade of energy that our solar system is passing through. Now, spiritually, and I don't know if I should use the word spiritually, remember I said that we go through all these different levels on our way up, our evolutionary path, okay? Well, what's happening is planet Earth, for the past 75,000 years, has been what you could call, and this is my way of describing this and trying to make it simple, a third chakra planet, i.e., the planet has an energy to it
Why don't you explain that, Wynn? Not everybody's going to understand the word chakra.
Chakra has to do in Hinduism. They talk about seven energy centers in the body, starting from the top of the head, going to the groin, and each energy center represents a certain area of development. So, for example, the third chakra is the solar plexus, which represents power and individuality. We all know about the third eye, which is another name for the chakra that's on your forehead, represents psychic awareness. There's the heart, which represents compassion and empathy. So there's seven of these areas, and each one defines a certain level of evolution. And we are all either open or closed. We could all have somebody who's psychic look at us and say, well, he's a little closed in his heart chakra, his third eye is open. We all are varying levels. Well, the entire planet Earth also is at a level. The planet Earth has a energy around it, which has a consciousness and an awareness to it, and it grows just as we do. And planet Earth.
Wait a minute. When you're saying that the Earth itself, the dirt, the ball itself has a consciousness.
Not the dirt. There's a consciousness, just like our bodies. Attached to an energy. The earth attaches to an energy. You know, we connect with the energy of the earth as humans. When we are living in harmony, we are part of the, we are connected with the earth's energy. Indians, Native Americans know this very well. And they honor the earth. We have, people calling it Mother Earth. There is a consciousness to the earth. Now, let me say, I can't explain how this consciousness works. I can intuit that it's probably true, but I know that both group souls talk about the consciousness of the earth. So just go along to think that the earth has a consciousness, and that when we come here to go through our evolution of our reincarnational episodes, we are participating in the consciousness of the earth. And we are part of it. Our energy fields extend into the consciousness of Earth and vice versa. So the Earth has been providing lessons of third chakra, which are power and individuality. People have been here learning lessons of power and individuality. And the Earth is now being upgraded to where the new lesson is going to be fourth chakra, compassion and empathy. Now, the way evolution works is that free will is granted. No one is forced to move into compassion and empathy unless they choose it. And there's going to be a division of souls, those that still choose to recontinue third chakra lessons, power and individuality, and those that move into the fourth chakra planet, which is being developed, called compassion and empathy. And this upgrade is caused by this increase of energy that our entire solar system is going through. Now,
is this what accounts for why some people are going to ascend and some are not? Because what you're saying is that some people simply could choose not to?
Well, people don't know that they're making this choice, of course. They're making it, but they don't know they're making it because they don't know the implications of how they of their actions. Right now, in this period of time, this is the time to transcend fear and open your heart in a spiritual sense and to work through your shadow, because this is going to be, according to the information, this is going to be happening from 2007 to 2017. And the way it works, this is like This happens for all planets going through this kind of evolution, and apparently it's a common event. Every populated planet goes through an ascension period, and there's a division of souls. There's those that move into the new higher frequency of the planet, and those that are repeaters. And the repeaters go to another planet in another star system to start over. And the group soul that's talking through David Wilcock is the group soul that is the administrator, as far as I can understand, of this event. They've talked about moving souls from planet to planet. For example, at one period in our own solar system, there were two planets, Mars and Maldek, that were destroyed. Maldek is destroyed and became the asteroids. And the souls on those planets were moved to our planet to continue their evolution. Now, there's another interesting thing about our planet, and it explains a lot of things if you start to think about it. And that is that our planet was used as a repeating planet for those souls in other planets, in other star systems, that did not go through their ascension process and had to repeat this level. And so apparently, the different races on our planet are from different star systems and different planets. And like Chinese are from one planet, black people are from a planet, et cetera, et cetera.
And so the whole planet really is a melting pot.
Yes. And this was an experiment by the other side, by these higher forces on the other side. This was an experiment to bring together disparate elements from different planets and different star systems, put them all on one planet, and evolve them together. And the experiment didn't work. And it didn't work because they didn't get along.
When I'm losing you on the sound, is your microphone okay?
My microphone is okay. I'm on my cell phone, so let me raise it a little bit. My signal seems okay. Is that better? Is that okay?
Yeah, that's a little bit better.
That's better? Okay. So, our planet is made up of cycle repeaters. And, basically, when all planets go through ascension processes, they all have a group soul that's supposed to assist them, or that assist them, that's like formally went through this process millions of years before, and it's trying to guide.
Your phone.
Nevin, let me tell you something, and that is, I've had radio stations break down when I start talking about this stuff. This is like such catalytic information, and I learned that I'm under observation by negative forces that don't want this information out. And
I can't believe what happened. It was absolutely, I've never seen it happen before.
Mm-hmm.
But you notice it
happened just as I was at, like, the most important explanation of what we're talking about.
Well, let's go for it.
So let me see if I can recapture where I was, that our planet is going into the fourth dimension, and there's going to be an event where people move from this dimension to the higher dimension. It's going to happen in waves, according to these sources, over a 10-year period of time, and it's going to start out in 2007. For people that have studied this material and are not afraid, they've described to me how it's going to feel. Well, it's going to, you know, I've asked question after question after question. And I mean, I've logged all the answers, and I can share the content of those questions. I have some of them on Conversations with My Girlfriend. If you go to that website, you read the whole story. At the end of it, it talks about these particular questions about ascension. And it's like, in order to qualify for this event, you need to keep your energies open. You have to heal your heart. You have to, I would say the first thing anyone should do is read my book. And then I've learned that there's other people who are channeling that have come up with the same story, independently of me and David. A guy I recommend is Michael Sharp. He's got a book called Dossier of Ascension. He's a university professor at sociology in Canada. And he started getting this information. And, I mean, you know, like anyone, he said, can this be real? And he got a very similar scenario to what I'm describing. Then he started looking at the Hopi. This is the things that I started doing when this was happening for me. I started looking at the Hopi prophecies. I started looking at other people that channel all their information. I started looking at conversations with God, and I found across the board there was either a direct or an implied idea of ascension. Even in Edgar Cayce's material, it said there's an unfolding of an age and a folding out of a new age, but it's not described exactly what it means. What was Jesus talking about? Why did Jesus talk about ascension? Because he was connected with these sources of information, was aware of this cycle, and was trying to prepare mankind for it. Do you need to know everything esoterically that I'm explaining? No. If you're a Christian and your heart's open and you're expecting this to happen, you will experience it as a Christian event. You'll experience it as Christ being with you. But you don't have
are you
to
saying,
be
a, Are you saying, Wynn, that people are going to get what they expect?
The way it's been explained is that the person's experience...
Wynn, speak a little bit louder. We're losing you.
The person's experience is going to match, to some extent, their belief patterns. They will create the familiarity with it. So, I mean, the way I describe it is like, okay, this bus is going to come to your door and say, are you ready? We're going now. And you're going to say where we're going, and the guy's going to say, oh, you don't know? No. Well, it's too hard to explain. And then you say, when are we coming back? And the guy's going to say, we're not coming back. And you're not going to get in. You're not going to get in that bus unless you decide that this could possibly be real. And, you know, you go back. Are you there, Devin?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, just want to make sure we're not cutting out. That's where my book is so incredibly important, because it builds a case. It builds a case for David being Cayce. It builds a case for trusting the source, which you have to trust. You can't trust this information because I say it, because somebody says it. Everyone has to do their own due diligence. And there is the understanding in the book. I have the channelings from this group soul explaining what a person has to go through to qualify for this event. Plus, on David Wilcox's website, there's huge amounts of channelings from Ra talking about the human condition and how this works. And,
let's get beyond David Wilcox at this point. I mean, I think you've stated it quite well, what he expects, what the concept of Ra is. But there's a whole other issue going on here, and that is the issue of Winfrey and the channeling that he's been involved in. And you brought up before the conversations you were having with ministers. So I would like to cover a little bit your own personal knowledge aside from David Wilcox.
Well, you know, part of my own personal story is, if we go back to that, we were talking about Girlfriend X and how she was channeling the Elohim, and she was very much in a state of doubt. And eventually, in September of 2002, she left me. And I was brokenhearted. And I was suffering for about 6 weeks. And after 6 weeks, I called my old girlfriend up, and I call her Girlfriend Y, and she came and spent the night with me. In the middle of the night, she woke me up and said, get the tape recorder out, and they started coming through her. At least they said it was them. I didn't believe it. I said, no, this cannot be. They said they were the Council of Elohim, that they were paying tremendous attention to me, that what I was doing was very important, and that they were there for me, and I could reach them through girlfriend Y. And so first I thought that maybe she was jealous of the other girl and was trying to, you know, make me like her better. But I started over the next couple of months asking question after question, and I got the idea that it was the same source. They were answering questions that she could not answer. In fact, they started asking questions on behalf of other people, and they seemed to know everything about everyone. And they were answering questions with all this love and wisdom and guidance for the people that I was asking questions about. And then after about 3 months, if you recall, they had said that girlfriend X and I should go to Mesa, Arizona, because we would find a group that would welcome us and be interested in what we were doing. So I told girlfriend Y, let's spend the weekend in Mesa and see what happens. Now, I fairly well was convinced that this was going to be a wild goose chase, but we were in Motel 6 in downtown Mesa, and we were spending 2 days there. I'm thinking, how do I find a group that's going to be interested in what's happening to me? I said, well, let me find the metaphysical bookstores. So I called the metaphysical. There's no metaphysical bookstores in Mesa. So then I'm looking up churches because I'm going to look for a New Age church. There's no New Age churches in Mesa. But while I have the phone book open to churches, I see there's 3 pages of Mormon churches compared to a half a page of all the other churches. And so I said, they don't mean for me to introduce myself to the Mormons. I mean, I remembered that they had said that they were the same Elohim that was talking to Joseph Smith when he started the Mormon church. So we did a channeling on Sunday morning, and I asked the question, do you mean for me to introduce myself to the Mormons? And they said, not the entire church. There's a small group here that will be very interested in what you're doing. And so then I said, how do I find this group? I'm only here for the day, and there's 3 pages of Mormon churches here. And they said, go to the church on blankety blank street, and they identified a street name. And I looked through the 60 or so Mormon churches in Mesa, and sure enough, there was a church on the street name that they said. And so I told my friend, I said, I'm going to go myself, because I might have to just beat a quick retreat out of there. And I sat through the service, and I went up to the bishop, and I said, listen, I came from L.A. to be here. And he took me into his back room, and I told him the whole story. And he was listening. And I said, you know, I have 2 girlfriends in a row that have this voice coming out of them that say they're the Elohim, and they say they're the same Elohim that you worship. Now, I don't know if this is true, and I don't even know if they're the Elohim, but he starts listening, and he says, well, they're describing themselves as the way we understand the Elohim to be. It's interesting, in the Mormon doctrine, it said that God was once like us and will be like God, and God is many. There were many, they were describing essentially a group soul in the language of the time. And so at the end of the story, he listened, he said, Wynn, are you there, Devin?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm fascinated. Go for it.
I'm stopping to say, make sure you're there, because I want to make sure we don't lose the connection. Okay. Because Okay. Well, you may not let me know because you'll disappear.
Yeah. I have Don on the other end though. He'll call you.
So this Mormon bishop tells me Mormons believe that anyone can be a prophet. So I'm not going to say that anything you're saying is wrong. And would you be willing to share this with 3 of my church members? So I said, sure. So I call my friend up, and she takes the next day off, which is Monday. And he gives me the directions to go to this guy's house. And we go, and there's 3 people there. This time I bring girlfriend Y with me, and I tell the story. And they're all listening, and in the middle of me telling the story, she interrupts, and she says, there's something they want me to tell you. And I say, oh my God, what is she going to say? And so she says, they want you to know that they're hearing your prayers. And
what does she mean? You personally? Is that what they're saying to you? Are they
saying
that they are hearing your prayers personally, Wynn?
No, not my prayers, the Mormons' prayers, okay?
Okay.
She was talking to the, Mormons as a generic group, and particularly...
And she was informing them that she was channeling at that point and telling them that they're on the right path.
That they're hearing your prayers. That's what she said. And everyone started to cry, and including me. And I walked out of that meeting. For the first time, I said to myself, this is all real. I'm really talking to the Elohim. This is real. And, I mean, up to that point, it's like a science fiction story. I can't believe this is happening to me. I mean, it's just
did this put you into a position of wanting to become part of the membership, like convert to Mormonism?
No, not at all. You know, the deal is that I can tell you, I've learned a lot about Mormonism because I've studied it since all this happened. And that I'm not supposed to be denominational at all. I have a message for everybody, as does David Wilcock. And it would be a mistake for me to align myself with a particular religion, because no religion is better than any others. The only religion that's valid is the one that's in your own heart and your own connection that you make with your own higher self and the other forces. And religion is all...
You said as David Wilcox. Are you saying that there's a relationship between you and David that we haven't uncovered yet?
Well, I'm just the guy who wrote the book. David and I do our own things. And when I say as David Wilcock, I'm just projecting that, both of us are independently coming forward into the world with this message explaining ascension, explaining this dimensional shift. We both have our own experiences. Some places most points are fairly correlative in what we're both saying. It's not all points. And this is a very hard thing to put into the world and not get, it's like I'm only telling the story, and I'm not even going to say any of it's true. I'm only telling the story, and somebody has to then do their own investigation and make it real for themselves. I will say that anyone... Nevin, you're distorting. Go ahead.
What do you believe? Do you believe
I believe that there's a very strong possibility that this information is correct, and that if ascension is correct, it's the first thing that comes up for somebody, including me, was, geez, what if I don't make it? How do I make it? And so I say, the way they say to make it is to be loving and caring and open your heart and connect with the higher forces. And so I say, whether ascension happens or not, this is the time to open your hearts and to keep your energies open. No matter what happens in the world, this is the time to connect with the higher forces. Because if ascension is real, that's what qualifies you. And if you're in fear, and if you're in panic, and if you're in selfishness, that's what unqualifies you. So either way, whether it happens or not, it's a winning situation to follow their advice about how to approach it. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. I'm wondering, though, when you have, with all this experience you've had, you must be, at some level, arriving at some conclusions about Wynn Free, about yourself. What are your, here you are, a musician, a Berkeley brat, if you will, and all of a sudden, here you are on the forefront of the metaphysical. You now are involved in personal channeling, or at least indirectly. how do you see your role now? I mean, how do you see yourself?
I see myself as someone that goes out and talks about this. I've done book signings. I've done talks at churches. I'm going to start doing some phone conference calls for people that want to hear, pick my brain and learn what I know. And I mean, I'm in a position to where I say, I've got to put this out and I've got to, let people make up their own minds. And, I have a really deep understanding of if this is the way it is, I have a deep understanding of it. I have it from writing the book, from, doing, all the channelings and questions. I mean, we asked the question on behalf of your wife to girlfriend X, who now is believing that this is real. And I mean, I think I played it for you, right? I played it over the phone.
Yes, you did.
You could hear the quality of, the energy that was, that they had when they did that. And, it's been very much of a challenge to me. One of the challenges to me has been, well, geez, how do I earn a living? I'm not supposed to do this as a business. I know that. And, I spent 4 years writing my book, basically living in my RV and writing in coffee shops. And then the book comes out and I realize I've got to promote it. And then I've got to tell my own story. Well, I'll probably make a try at earning a living by putting my music out and selling my CDs, or when people buy the book off of my website, that does give me support. Theoretically, I mean, you probably never wrote a book. One of the things I found out that is probably, if people buy a book in a store, there is a 9-month delay from the time they buy it to the time you get your little commission on it. So.
Oh, absolutely. I've had that problem with a set of, six books for the past few years I've been trying to get to, but the final commitment I made to someone else, I'm finally able to read them. I've had them for well over a couple of years.
Right.
Ben, listen, we are really running out of time. It's, we're almost 2 hours now into the show, and I'm afraid we're just going to have to wrap it up. What I want you to do for the next minute or so is let the audience know what you expect and what you think people ought to be doing or ought to be preparing for.
Well, I'm going to answer this from the biggest overview I can, okay? One of the things that I've learned, and it's been said over and over again, that we are creating what's happening on this planet. The changes we see happening are a result of the fact that there's too much of the population that is not connecting with these higher forces and is operating in a disconnected way where their energy systems are not in a flow. There's too many people that are following the dictates of society, of getting ahead, of having a beautiful wife, of having sex, a great car, being better than the neighbors. And all of this stuff has nothing to do with your evolution as a soul. And when you die, what's going to matter is what you've done in the highest service and not what you've done to get worldly recognition. Television hypnotizes people into lower levels of matrix, and people are watching too much television. People are anticipating disasters. People are not creating spiritual affinity with each other. My book explains how to do that. It explains it. In fact, some of the channelings actually connect you, if you are open to it, with this group soul. They want to work with people. They want to help uplift their energies. They are there. They're real. They're as real as your next breath. But you have to look for them, and you have to open up yourself to the possibility that it is real in order to connect. You have
okay,
to
wait, one, one more time for where people can get a copy of your book. Would you announce that one more time?
Yeah. CaseysBack.com. CaseysBack.com. That's my website. They can also get it at any of the major bookstores. And I really urge this book puts this case together piece by piece by piece so that your logical mind can accept the possibility of the premise that we're going into spiritual ascension. I realize how hard a premise that is. And the first time anyone hears it, it provokes you. I mean, it says, do I want this to be true? Is this real? Who's this guy Winfrey? Where does he come from? Is this a positive source that he's talking to? I mean, it provokes all these questions. And you know what? You've got to kick the tires. You've got to check it out and see if it makes sense. Because I don't really want to be the spokesperson for this. I have to be. I've been put in the position. Too much experience, direct experience, with miracles and everything else, connecting with these sources to say, this just might be the way it is. And
I have one last question for you. Can we get you back on the show?
Of course you can.
Wonderful.
I avoided doing my big revelation, right?
That's all right. We can wait until the next show.
You know, I don't want people to focus on that. You know, Nevin knows, and we talked about it, I learned who I was in my past life. I'm pretty sure that I got it down. And it's a pretty provocative thing. And I know how David felt when I wanted to write the book about him being Casey, because I feel exactly the same way. People will focus on that and not what I'm saying this life. You know, people will think that it's a self-aggrandizing motive. And
we've got plenty of time. When you come back, maybe we can start going into things like your reincarnational experience and mine. Maybe we should even get one of your girlfriends on there to talk about it.
We'll get them both on and we'll have a round table because it makes it real for people. It's hard to believe these things, the things that have happened to me. It's hard to believe that they've happened. I mean, it's hard for me to talk about it. I realize how far it pushes the limit of, you know, the limit of reality. Yet,
I really appreciate all your efforts, but I got to close the show down. We are really running out of time here.
Okay, just wanted to mention conversationswithmygirlfriend.com. You can listen to the Don and Wynn show on Saturday nights. We're putting up a channeling from Girlfriend X or Girlfriend Y every week, describing what they see is in mankind's best interest to know and what may be happening in the near future. And
all right.
I'm going to do my best through my public presentations to help bring forth the kind of information people need to hear to ground their consciousnesses and be centered and to make the reality that these other dimensions exist and that they can communicate with us, and that they're paying attention to us and you and me right now, and we can have an experience that it's real.
All right, Wynn, thank you so much for being with us tonight. I've got to say good night, and that, folks, ends our show. Again, it was a fascinating journey into the realms of forbidden knowledge. Until next time, this is Nevin Campanella wishing all of you health, happiness, and a very safe journey on your chosen path. Good night.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.